Hallo bei den philosophischen Brocken, sagt Günter Friesinger, heute mit einer Sendung zum Symposium Netze hinter dem Netz. Das Symposium Netze hinter dem Netz beschäftigte sich mit der Frage des Digitalen hinter dem sozialen Netz, als auch der Sozialen hinter dem digitalen Netz. Wir hören heute dazu einen Vortrag von Rena Dangens. Rena Dangens ist unter anderem Organisatorin des deutschen Big Brother Awards und wird uns heute über ihre Erfahrungen mit den Netzen hinter dem Netz berichten.
I come from Bielefeld in Germany, which is not a very spectacular place, unlike Vienna. And in fact, there is a rumor in the networks that this place does not exist. The rumor goes back to a discussion in DE Talk Bizarre, where somebody wrote there's a conspiracy on Bielefeld, and people try to make you believe that this town exists, and they go to very, very many efforts. They even have a football team running, and they have signs at the Autobahn, and it's really a great conspiracy to make you believe that this town exists. And other people said, well, I have been there, and they said, oh, they got you already. And this discussion was in the network in 1991. But we started even earlier than that, and back in 1984. And yeah, you've seen the title of the lecture, so you know who this guy is. This is Eric Satie, a French composer. He was very much in front of his time. He composed a background music. And he did not want to be in the focus of attention as a musician. He wanted the music to compose a frame, set a frame, design a frame where people feel welcome and get active themselves. And at his time, it was very irritating to people. For instance, he composed music for the break of a theater play. And people returned then when the music started, and he was reported to be shouting on the stage at the people, at the audience, don't listen, talk, eat, don't listen to the music. Nowadays, background music is very common. You hear it in every supermarket. But his music was different, and we have been putting it on stage. One piece of his called Vexation or Page Mystique. And this piece lasts 15 hours if you do it the way that Eric Satie intended it. And I give you at least a little impression if it works. Sound, yes. This piece of music lasts about 2 minutes, and Eric Satie suggested to repeat it 840 times. And this is what we did with two pianists and Padloon and I. Set the room, we designed the room so that people like to stay in there 15 hours. You wouldn't take it 15 hours to sit on these chairs here. You need space to move around, you need something to eat, you need other things to do. But we did this in several cities in Germany. And it was different each time because the audience is the main thing. It's not the music. So it never gets boring to have this piece on stage. The name of our project goes back to Eric Satie's Musique d'Ameublement. Musique d'Ameublement means music like furniture. We call ourselves Art d'Ameublement, which means art like environment or your inner environment. And this is also our art concept. And everything we have done since in the networks it's also something for us that is to be seen in this art context. For Padloon and I, everything we do is art, but in the context we work nowadays, we would not insist on this or call it like that, because politicians and media tend not to take it as serious when you say it's art, because they tend to think that this means playing around and not taking things serious. And we do take things serious, despite we have a lot of fun with our actions we do. This picture of Prospect Park in Brooklyn, for me, is a picture of a perfect place where you feel comfortable. And this is what Eric Satie wanted with his music. There are several criteria for feeling comfortable in a room, and some of them are the room must be interesting. It should be, you should have a view. It should be readable for you. So you should be able to find out how it works and how to get where and find out what is where. And another condition is that you should not feel you are being observed. You should not feel under surveillance. And all these criteria are important to make you feel yet that you are on the same level as other people. The difference of a person watching someone else to a video camera watching you is really huge, because it's a technical system. You don't know who is on the other side. You don't know what is going to happen with these pictures. Is anybody looking at all? And there you have a bias we think is unhealthy. From all this theory, we get to the organization I work with. It's called FÖBOT, and it was founded by people, by the active audience of a series of events we call public domain. And public domain started after the Chaos Computer Club did a session, a three-day and three-night session in our gallery in Bielefeld. And after that, we had this series of events running every month. And public domain means it's free for everybody to go there. And also, it means it's everybody's business, the things we talk about there. You should know about it, and you should get acquainted with them. And we present different topics each time we have a public domain, and it's still running the series since 1987. And some people of the audience then founded FÖBOT. And we could have called ourselves Chaos Computer Club Bielefeld, but we did not want to take the hacker image for free, because we were not the people who hacked the NASA computers, and we wanted to get known from our own actions. So we needed another name, and the only name that came up to us was this really strange name, FÖBOT. FÖBOT is the abbreviation of Verein zur Förderung des öffentlichen bewegten und unbewegten Datenverkehrs. I won't translate that. It's a pun of words which is playing with the absurd abbreviations that were used for telecommunication means when the Post was still in charge for telecommunication in Germany. You had very complicated abbreviations like FETAP mit Gebans. FETAP mit Gebans means Fernsprechtischapparat mit Gebührenanzeiger. You could call it telephone in the real world. And so this is how we got this silly name. But nowadays we are known, so we can't change it. One of the first projects of FÖBOT was installing our own communication system with no censorship, and where the users are really participants, and they decide on which topics to talk about there. And we decided to take Cerberus as a software, and we got involved with the software then pretty soon, because we wanted to change things within the software, because it's channeling the communication. And in the background, you see there a picture, and There we got it here. Who knows where this is? Any idea where these twin towers are? No? You know, of course. It's Sarajevo. You see the left tower really burned, but it was strong enough to stay there. We installed, in fact, a Cerberus network in former Yugoslavia during the war, from 1991 to 1996, which was the only means of communication between the former parts of the country, because the telephone lines between Croatia and Serbia were blocked most of the time, so it was not very easy to make a call to get connected to people on the other side of the front line. But international lines still worked, so the hack was simply to route the messages with a simple bulletin board from Zagreb, let's say in Croatia, via Bielefeld in Germany to Belgrade in Serbia. And we had BBS systems in almost any place, in any main place in former Yugoslavia, like in Ljubljana, Zagreb, Belgrade, Tuzla, Sarajevo, Pristina, and so on. Also, SAMINET was something where we did not create the content, but we set a frame. Just to get you back to Eric Satie, it was we are composing a frame within other people can work. Cerberus is the logo of the software, and some of you might know FIDO. FIDO was a bulletin board system from the United States that ran before. And FIDO is more in German, it's more the name of the nice dog. FIDO, come on, apport, bring me something. Whereas Cerberus has a little more bite and has three heads, so it's more, it's not so easy to catch it. And that was the idea. We wanted a censorship, to make censorship impossible by means of the network structure. And when we joined the programmers for development, the first thing that we did was to install an encryption to all personal messages. And I can tell you that this is not really a feature that the people who buy the software appreciate, because the people who buy it are the system operators. And in fact, after we gave out the update and people installed it, we got a lot of complaints of system operators who said, hey, I can't read the mail of the users anymore. And we told them this is exactly what we wanted. And by setting the technical facts, it was the only way to get a real discussion on it. It's completely illegal to read the mail of the users in Germany. But people would not care as long as it was so easy by just clicking on the file. And I found this was very important work. We also implemented privacy in a lot of more features within Cerberus. But with AOL, then putting a free CD in every mailbox, there was no chance for software like this anymore. So we decided in 2000 to put our efforts on another layer, and we started to organize the Big Brother Awards. That's a negative prize that is given to companies or politicians or other organizations who violate privacy the most, of surveillance or collecting data intensively. And we have a nice statue for it, which has the text of Huxley. In fact, we did not like the Orwell idea of the state doing all the surveillance and the state being the only enemy. And we thought this idea is not really helping to understand what is happening in the age of digital everyday work. And this is why we have the text of Huxley in there, where he says it's a sleeping school where little children learn how to be content with where they are. Like they have different categories of people: alpha, beta, delta, epsilon. And this text says, "I'm so happy to be a beta. Alpha are very clever, but they have to work a lot. And delta are stupid, and they have to wear khaki. Khaki is a ghastly color, and so I'm very happy to be a beta." And we put this text on there as a sign that a lot of the problems arise from people being not conscious about what is happening, what is violating their freedom, and they are content with what is happening to a large extent, and this is one of the problems. It's not just the enemy, the state. We give out the Big Brother Award in a big gala event, and it's really like an Oscar celebration, and we have music and cabaret and so on. So it's a great event and a lot of fun. We have many award winners nowadays, and it's everything is documented on the web. And many topics were known because of the Big Brother Awards. One of the topics are customer loyalty cards. The payback card was the main winner in 2000, and it showed a lot of people that customer cards are not there for having fun, saving money, but in fact they are there for collecting data on you. Another topic is scoring. Scoring means to have one number that that gives your value as a customer. So when you have a good score, then you are you get good service by a company. And if you don't have a good score, then they might deny even you to do any service for you. And there is a score for every person in Germany, and even if they have no data about you, they just look at the data of your neighbors right and left, because they think similar people will group together. So it's decided on you. A third topic that got known by the Big Brother Awards are RFID chips. RFID is a radio frequency identification, and the Metro Group, which is the third largest retailer worldwide, got this award for their future store, where they try this in a real supermarket. Well, the award winners are not very happy, and usually they don't turn up, despite they would get a very nice statue or at least a photo of it. And but the only winner so far who turned up was Microsoft. And there, the privacy commissioner of Microsoft flew in from Munich to take the award. And I thought this was good style, because he said, of course he does not agree with the jury, but they take the award and they are not proud of it. And they said, well, we need digital rights management, it's good for the artist, maybe we did not do any good communication about it. This might be a mistake, but well, okay, we accept that we should respect privacy more and take more account of it. So this was the speech of the Microsoft Privacy Commissioner, and of course this is a nice speech you can do, but we decided that then taking it literally is a good thing and remind them from time to time what they said there. As I said, most of the prize winners don't turn up at the celebration, but some award winners can't escape because we bring them the award. And Bayer was one of them. Bayer got the award for testing urine for drugs on the apprentices. And we cooperated with the critical shareholders on that occasion, and I got a share of Bayer for, and so I was entitled to speak there and at the shareholders meeting, annual meeting, and there were about 5,000 people. So Bayer got the award not in front of 200 or 250 people in Bielefeld, but in front of 5,000. It was projected, and it was really great halls there. But it was the most stressful speech I ever did, I can tell you. There was security everywhere. It was heavier than on an airport, on an intercontinental flight to the United States. And afterwards, I thought, I'm really happy still to live in Germany and not somewhere in South America, because I would not be sure that I might be alive for very much longer after doing what I did there. When I was talking, before I was called to talk there, they lined up 10 black-clothed security people in a line. I had to pass on my way to the speaker's place. It was like psychoterror. And a journalist who took a photo of me was then cashed by the security, and they took her out. Even she had a press license and everything, and she had to delete the photos. Despite it was only me on the photo, nobody else's rights were violated, but they said, we don't care. So this was quite an experience. I think I skipped this one on the video surveillance, despite it's a nice thing. And I also skipped this. It's another winner. And I get back to the RFID chips, because this is a very good example how to stay on one topic and on different layers of action. Of course, we could... Sorry. Maybe you should... Who knows what RFID is? Uh-huh. Okay. Then I won't go to any detail. Important is the serial number, that every object can be identified, not just a class of objects, but every object, every single version of the object. And you can be scanned by radio frequency. So not necessarily you know when you're being scanned. And this poses a lot of problems. These are the dangers. I won't tell you in detail this. It's a boring bullet point slide, but I give you an example. When we had Metro as a winner, we thought it's quite difficult to tell the public about RFID, how it works, and why is it a problem for privacy. And so we thought, it's not happening yet. We are not giving the award for any abuse of data. It did not happen before, but in 2003, they just had opened this future store. But we thought, this is going in a direction that is very, very dangerous, and we should give them a sign that they have to respect privacy, and we should talk about how to design this technology in order that it's compatible with democracy and privacy. At the gala, we had a text that had future scenarios, because it had not happened, so we had to invent scenarios what might happen. And one was Marion said gets a fine from the town of Duisburg. She gets a letter with a fine saying her she has to pay 10 euro for littering in the park. And she knows she never litters, throws any chocolate paper anywhere. And then she tries to find out how this could happen. And she gave chocolate bars to children who were singing at her door in November in Germany. It's a habit. So she could be identified. The single chocolate bar paper could be identified and could be connected with her purchase at a supermarket. And another scenario was that a person who is working in the supermarket gets a problem because he goes to toilet and smoking too often, and the supermarket finds out because he has an RFID chip in his working suit. And another scenario is a startup entrepreneur bought himself one of these flash fridges with RFID scanner that can always tell him what is in the fridge and how much longer it will keep. And then he has a dream, and he will wake up and sweat because in this dream the fridge together with the toaster ordered every night a pizza tonno, and they ate it themselves, and he gets the bill later, and the next morning when he wakes up and thinks, oh, it was just a dream, he gets a letter from his insurance telling him he does not eat really healthy, and they will put up his monthly bill.
Gesetzt den Fall, wir schlafen zu dritt.